This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Think back a month. It's day two of the Iraq War. You're at work, itching to know what's happening. You might grab the newspaper, but when it's all happening so fast, that's old news. There's the TV, not looked upon too fondly by your boss, or you can zip around the web. More Americans turn to the World Wide Web for war information than following September the 11th. If the Gulf War belonged to CNN, some say, then Iraq belonged to the Internet. According to a new Pew Internet poll, 77% of online Americans use the Internet in connection with the war, some to send prayers, others to hear their point of view echoed, still more just to keep up with the latest news. Americans turn mostly to the websites of American TV networks and newspapers for information, but more than in any other war, they were also able to read the op-ed pages in Paris and Berlin, thanks to engines that translate web pages to English. This hour, we'll hear more about who used what and how, according to the Pew study. We'll talk with a journalism professor about the best sites to get news, as well as how to vet them, and if all of this usage translates to actual cash. As always, we want to hear from you. Where did you do your war web crawling? How do you use the web for war news and views? How did you check if the information you were getting was reliable? Join the conversation. Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, John Lee Anderson of The New Yorker joins us from Baghdad. But joining us now by phone from Nassau in the Bahamas is Lee Rainey. He's director of Pew Internet and American Life. And good of you to join us while you're on vacation.
It's a privilege, Neil. Thanks.
I bet it is. Your study focused on how online Americans used the web. But first of all, tell us, how many Americans are online?
We figured that about 60% of adults and about three-quarters of teenagers are online. That translates into about 116 million adults and another 30-plus million teenagers. And out of that crowd, as you point out, we found that about three-quarters of them got some kind of use out of the Internet during the war. Either they were using email to talk about the war with friends and family and perhaps other politically active people, or they were using the web to get information.
One of the interesting things you looked at was at the opinions of those who were gathering news online, their opinions about the war. There were differences between those who supported the war and those who opposed it in the way they used the web.
Generally, what we found was that those who opposed the war, who were a minority of online Americans, the general political outlook of Internet users was very similar to the overall population, but war opponents were more active and more appreciative of the kinds of things they could do online. For instance, they were much more likely to turn to the Internet to find ways to get politically involved, to share emails with families and friends about their concerns about the war, and also to contact public officials about the war. By the same token, supporters of the war, for instance, were much more likely to get patriotic email or send email of that type, and also to send email back and forth requesting prayers.
Yeah, that part intrigued me. This was one of the main uses of the Internet during the war.
There was a lot of spiritual activity going on online. About a third of Internet users regularly go online to do some kind of spiritual work, either going to spiritual websites or sharing concerns about their spiritual life through email and instant messaging. And it's actually one of the most important things that people end up doing online when their hearts are being tugged in a lot of different directions. After September 11th, for instance, we saw a tremendous amount of activity that was very much related to spiritual work online.
How did the volume of web users and news site visitors, how did that compare to the, for example, the first month after September 11th?
There were record-breaking numbers of people going online to get news for this war. The story of getting news online is a stair-stepping story over time. Big news events tend to drive a lot of traffic, but then the permanent online news audience stays much higher than it had previously been. This war was the first time that we had ever seen in our survey work that more than a third of Internet users were regularly getting news online. Usually, it was below a quarter, and so that's a major jump, and I would predict that after this war is really over and after the news environment settles down, there will be many more people who on an everyday basis or on a regular basis will turn to the Internet to get news.
It's interesting. 66%, two-thirds of Internet users, according to your poll, say the ability to get news from a variety of sources was their primary reason for using the net, yet the primary sources they apparently went to were American television network sites and American newspaper sites.
Right. In many Internet users' minds, there's not much difference in the quality of information they're getting from other media and the quality they're getting online. As a matter of fact, those worlds have merged for most Internet users. There are some Internet users, though, who really did exploit the breadth and variety and velocity of information they could get online in a way that you couldn't possibly do if you were a newspaper reader or a magazine reader or radio listener or a TV watcher. Those are people who went to foreign news sites, went to alternative media sites. A handful of them even went to war blogs to get up-to-date information and to get a variety of perspectives.
Now, war blogs and blogs in general, a lot of press, not so many visitors.
We only found that 4% of U.S. Internet users went to blogs in any way, shape, or form for war news. They tended to be a very elite crowd. They were Internet veterans, had many years of Internet experience. Many of them had broadband connections. So it's important because it's an elite audience that is turning to this new form of online diaries, basically. The technology is pretty simple, but you can basically update material all the time. And so I guess they will grow in importance over time, but they certainly only gained a little foothold during this conflict.
Well, Lee Rainey, you will be appalled to learn that another cold front has swept through the Northeast. So drive us all crazy. Tell us what the weather is like in the Bahamas today.
Well, I'm looking out my window at billowing clouds. It's about 84 degrees, and I'm probably going to head to the pool after this interview, Neil.
We hate you, Lee.
Okay.
Lee Rainey was the co-author of a study called The Internet and the Iraq War. It was conducted by Pew Internet and American Life Project, which he directs, and he joined us on the phone from the terribly nice Bahamas. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is from our New York bureau is Sri Srinivasan. He's a Columbia University professor of journalism and specializes in digital journalism. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
And I'm hoping the weather's just as lousy in New York as it is here in Washington.
Oh, it absolutely is. I would love to be in the Bahamas.
We heard from Lee Rainey that a lot of folks are hitting TV sites and newspaper sites. Give us the landscape. What's out there?
Well, basically, there's a range of things. You've got the old media websites, things that are associated with traditional media, things even like NPR.org or ABC, CNN, Fox. All of these are what we call traditional news outlets that have a foothold in cyberspace and have an outpost there. We also have the newspaper websites from local small-town newspapers to regional papers like the Portland Oregonian to the New York Times. They're all online. So that's one type of one set of websites that people go to. The others are more independent publications that didn't exist before the Internet became an everyday phenomenon. So we're talking in the last 3, 4, 5 years, we've seen websites like news.com, which is a technology website. A lot of people went there to keep track of the technology and how technology has been affected by the war, the business side of technology. So these are the kind of websites that have established a brand name, if you will. There's a very notorious site, the Drudge Report, which Matt Drudge, a sort of internet gossip, he pioneered the site. He's doing very well with it. That's become an established brand name online. So that's another set. And then we've also, you already mentioned war blogs or web logs. That's where that word comes from. And it's a kind of thing that journalists love talking about, and it gets a lot of press. But as you pointed out, if only 4% of this poll, which was looking at internet users, you can imagine what the actual number is of the general population.
We're interested in what you listeners thought of web coverage during the war. What did you go to the Internet for, and did you find it? Our telephone number, again, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And our first caller is Fatma, who's with us from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hello. My comment is I found myself logging on to the Internet pretty frequently because my local news here, television news, didn't do a good job reporting how many Iraqi civilians died. They never once reported those 2,000 or 3,000, the high numbers of Iraqis that were dead. and I found myself logging onto the internet. And the local television news spent a lot more time covering pro-war rallies, and I was very angry about that.
That's interesting, Sri. Do people generally go more to these sort of national media sites that we think of when they're interested in following a war, like ABCNews.com or the New York Times or something like that, or to their local news outlets?
Well, it depends on what's on top of their mind. And so if they're a new person to the internet, you know, I do some work here in New York for the local ABC affiliate, the television station, and we're constantly pushing out our website, which is 7online.com, because that's what the local viewers might go to. But if you're a little more savvy user who has been on the internet for a while, you might be doing other things and going to sites that are more international. And that's really where we see the effect of the internet in this war, where we were able to see that people were going online to find out what are people thinking about in other countries. For the first time, we couldn't do this with the last war, you know, if you look back to 1991, where you couldn't go and see what was being said in the Arab world. You couldn't see what the French newspapers were saying or the British. And that's where a lot of people who are unhappy with the American media, they were going to that. Also, just to get a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great thing that you can do.
Fatma, as we know, there are still no reliable numbers on the numbers of Iraqi civilians who were killed and wounded in this conflict. When you went online, did you find more of what you wanted?
Oh, definitely I did. And there were actually particularly one or two days, when I was hearing a whole lot more on the internet about Iraqi people of the Iraqi army, not necessarily Iraqi civilians, in the thousands, that I didn't find reported in my local television news.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Neil, this is really what we find, that people are going to, they often have a notion of what is missing, and then they go for that. So often you'll find people who are anti-war, who will look for the anti-war information, and on the other side, people are pro-war. So I didn't find as many people sort of trying to expand their horizons as much as I found people looking out for things that either reconfirm what they already thought or are along their political lines.
Our next caller is Elizabeth, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Okay, I'm fine. How about you?
Good. I would agree with Fatma that I do find that there is really not a whole lot of coverage that interests me in the national news here in the United States, but I have found that the internet has provided me with access to some international news sources that have been very, very helpful to me. I read my local newspaper from Berlin. I'm from Berlin, and there's a local newspaper there that I have as a bookmark on my computer and read regularly. And it usually leads me to other European or international news that I find are doing a much better job, or at least doing a job in supplementing the news that I don't get here.
You have a big advantage of being able to speak German, I assume, or read German.
I suppose so, although I do have to say that this morning I was led to an article in the London Times that even American users would be able to read. It was actually from yesterday's paper, and it covered a story that I haven't really found covered in the American media very much. Actually, it's been covered. It's this whole story about the rescue of Private Jessica Litch.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely found that the American media has been very eager to cover the story. However, Richard Lloyd Perry in the London Times wrote an article that was in the paper yesterday that was called "So Who Really Did Save Private Jessica?" that I thought put a whole different spin on it that I don't think I can find in the American media at all, and I would definitely encourage listeners to check it out.
Okay, Elizabeth, thanks very much.
Thank you.
When we come back from a break, we'll take more of your calls about how you use the internet to gather and exchange war news and views. 800-989-TALK, TOTN at NPR.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how Americans use the internet to track events during the Iraq War. Did you find yourself using the web more? What were the sites you relied on most, and for what? You can give us a call at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest in our bureau in New York is Sri Srinivasan. He's a tech guru, a professor of journalism at Columbia University's School of Journalism. And, well, let's get right back to the callers. Our next caller is Amber, who's in San Diego.
Hi. I was just calling to tell you how I use the Internet. I'm a former Marine. I've been out for a little more than a year. My husband's currently on active duty. We have a huge network of friends between the two of us who are in Iraq right now. And every single night before I go to bed, I can't sleep until I check the Internet for the fallen heroes, MIAs, and POWs. That's helped me through this whole thing emotionally, knowing that we have so many people out there. It helps me sleep at night to know that everybody we know is safe.
Hmm. Which sites did you go to find that information?
Mostly Fox News, sometimes CNN, but mostly FoxNews.com.
Mm-hmm. You could have gone to the Defense Department website.
Well, I could have, but I enjoy Fox News. I enjoy the channel on TV. That's the one I watch the most, so I just use their website.
Okay. And you got what you needed from the web then?
Definitely. And I check the articles every day as well.
Okay, Amber. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sri, I wanted to follow up on what you were talking about before, and that was the idea that people were using the web in much the way some of them use radio, I guess, and TV too, to find places where their opinions will be reinforced.
I think that's the biggest change from, you know, the ability to go find out people who think like you. And they're able to do that with the Internet. And if you think back to the 1991 war, where you had to watch CNN and that was it, basically, and read the newspapers, now you can go out and get a wide range of opinions and you can find lots of people who are like you out there. And so that's a very refreshing thing for a lot of people.
But in a sense, it's that continuing market fragmentation that whatever your view, you can find a place where it will be reflected.
That's right. And if you don't find what you want, you can put your own view up, you know, with making your own web pages, or you can do these web blogs. If you can do Microsoft Word, that's the about level of technology you need to make web pages nowadays. And so if you can do simple word processing, you're pretty much on your way.
I just wanted to read an email we got from Eric Martin. I'm writing from Copacabana, Bolivia, he says. I've been traveling in South America since January. I've used the Internet as a major source of news, while the Voice of America and BBC World Service are scratchily available at times and in certain locations. There are few reliable news sources in English here. The Internet provided me with a much wider source of information, New York Times, BBC, the liberal Common Dreams website, than shortwave or the occasional satellite CNN. So that's obviously a use if you're overseas and feeling out of touch. That's obviously one source, one use you can put the web to. Let's get back to our callers. Hugh joins us now from Surrey in Maine.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I responding to your question. I tend to be pretty liberal in my views, so I can access Common Dreams and I have another one called truthout.org, and I also go back to my homeland in Ireland to check out the news there. And we have here in the in our area, Hancock County, we have a Hancock County News Network, local, several hundred people in the area who send in messages or who let others know in the network what's a worthy article to access, and they give the web page for it. So, and we get involved. Many of us are in the peace movement, or do vigils and such like, and so we communicate in that way as well.
Did you use the web in that sense to organize these kinds of demonstrations?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in fact, the well, through emails and through websites, we've organized, done quite a lot of organizing along the down east Maine area.
Thanks very much, Hugh.
Okay.
Good luck to you.
Right. I know.
Let's go to Keith, and Keith joins us from Fairfax, California.
Hello. Yes, one of the I try to challenge myself a little bit by looking at the right wing aspect of the opinion by going to I go to theworldnewsreport.com. I also check out the you know, the standard network news sites and NPR. I also go to truthout.org, which is I find is really, they collect articles from different papers and kind of, you know, link them on that page. One of the things that's kind of exposed to for the first time is how much the American press never really asked the hard and the deep questions before this went on. Like, for instance, the BBC website, hearing some of the things, like an interview with Rumsfeld, which I, for the first time, you know, I heard the press asking him really some questions that he had to actually, you know, think about and respond carefully to. And it's like, sort of alarming, I guess, that it seems like American media and news sources tend to want to not be seen as unpatriotic or something. And that became, that was accessible to me for the first time by just reading the web. I still have mixed feelings on this war, but I'm somewhat alarmed by even how NPR and some other people didn't seem to really ask the tough questions to give the public an informed basis to form our opinions on and whether this was the right thing to do or not.
So I, if you were of mixed views, I guess, you know, you were obviously looking for a lot of different sources of information.
Yeah, and particularly what I found was, you know, when you read some of the European press and all, is they explore much more like what connections financially might, you know, the Bush administration and all the ties that might have to wanting to have a war, like being invested in Raytheon and all the companies that make the weapons and all the companies that build it back up after it's destroyed. So, you know, it begins to make me wonder, like, do we have some, you know, are the people in charge here, you know, making money on both ends? They destroy it and then use our tax money to build it back up. Meanwhile, they're all invested in the corporations. And, you know, you see a lot more of that being reported in the European press and other presses. You know, and I just think Americans really, this is exposed to me that we really need to wake up. We need better journalism. We need people who are willing to ask tough questions and not be afraid that they'll be ignored by Rumsfeld at the next news conference.
Okay, Keith, thanks very much. Sri, I wanted to ask you, there are these things called meta sites. Explain them, what they are. They're sort of one-stop shopping?
That's right. Sites that let you find all the information in one place or link to several different websites, the way our caller just mentioned. So the site that I turn to is a site called Google News. Google, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, is the most popular search engine, and it has a news section. So if you just go to the front of Google, you'll see a news button. And if you click on that, you get links to 4,500 news sites from around the world. So instead of jumping around from CNN to BBC to Le Monde or whatever it is that you're looking for, you can just go to one place and it will archive and have the latest information for you minute by minute almost. And it's a wonderful resource. I use it every day. So I stop jumping around and I just go there and I keep refreshing. Whatever topic I'm interested in, I'll type in the name of the subject and then just hit refresh and it'll show you what's going on.
Obviously, if you go to a site like the BBC's website or the New York Times or any of the other big media outlets, you can have a certain degree of assurance on the quality of the information that you're reading there. I mean, within the limitations of whatever media outlet you're reading about. But, you know, do the producers of online journalism have the same journalistic credentials and experience as major news organizations?
It again depends on the organizations we're talking about. For the most part, yes. For real online journalism, they're absolutely in fact, some of the very best people went on to build and create these websites. When it comes to the second tier, sort of the original reporting or original to the web sites, then it can get a little murkier. So what I tell people is anytime you go to a website for the very first time and you're not sure whether you can trust it or not, find a portion of the site that you know something about, some information there, and do what we call a fact check and see if that rings true. If that piece of information is correct, there's a good chance the rest of it is accurate as well. And what we've been seeing is because of the ability not just to have websites but also email, people are sending around stories that aren't quite true. They heard something from somewhere else and they're forwarding it along. And these kinds of things, because when people see something on their screen coming from someone they know via email, they tend to believe it more than if someone walking down the street said it to them. So there's still something psychological about seeing it in print, so to speak, even though it's cyber print, and they see a photograph and they tend to believe it. This is not about the war, but during the war, there was a story that was circulating, a set of photographs from the space, which were allegedly pictures from an Israeli satellite of the space shuttle blowing up from space. dramatic pictures, as you can imagine, of the space shuttle blowing up and saying that this is being kept from us, this is from an Israeli spy satellite, and here it is, have a look. And this is a similar sort of information that came out, you know, Nostradamus predicting 9/11 after the World Trade Center attacks and things like that, mm-hmm. where people were willing to believe and forward it because it's so easy to do.
Let's talk now with Bob, who's with us from Virginia Beach.
Well, hello there. How are you doing today?
All right. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I find this subject quite interesting and quite timely as well. I'm the father of a freshman in high school. Her name is Ashley. And the way that I've used the opportunity that the web has given us in the times of the war is to show my daughter that there's more to than what you think you see or hear in one particular point of view. And what I actually use the web with, and I use the Meta site, Google News. As a matter of fact, that's my homepage. And what I help her do is establish a line of thinking, a line of information, data streams that she could use to then assemble her own opinions and her own form her own as objective an opinion as she could on what was happening in the world.
So it was, for at least in this respect, a teachable moment.
It was indeed. And what was interesting is to be able to see a U.S. news outlet create a particular point of view, go ahead and move to another major news carrier to see that there's a slightly different slant to it, and then go for probably 15 or 20 minutes and follow up along that line of thinking on the web using Google. We also used a little bit of blogging. Of course, we're absolute novices at this thing, but it opened up a whole other world to us. And taking a look at the number of hits, the number of comments that were made about different things, and looking at other people's opinions as well, helped my daughter and myself form what we consider to be some very thorough basis to form our opinions on.
Well, Bob, you're unusual in that you were teaching your daughter. Usually it's the other way around, the kids teaching the parents. It certainly was in my case. And Tree, I wonder, the generation split, is it still hugely in favor of younger people?
No, I see a lot more of the older folks coming online. I think senior citizens are a major demographic who have found that the web gives them a whole range of access that they didn't have before, not just to connecting if they have grandchildren, but also their own interest groups. And they're, you know, so you're not being marginalized as much as you might have been at another time. So I think the gap is less, but Bob does not sound like a novice, even though he thinks he is. The fact that he's doing this shows that he is teaching the skills that these kids need, which is skepticism when you come to the internet. And if we can have more people being skeptical, we'd be all better off.
Bob, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much for your time.
We're talking about the web and the war. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Gordon Burrell, president and CEO of Burrell & Associates, a local media research and consulting firm. One of the great mysteries of online media, of course, is anybody actually making any money off this stuff? And Gordon's going to help us look at the dollars and cents sides of how hometown paper and TV affiliates are supporting their dot-com ventures. Gordon, good of you to join us today.
Good afternoon. I'm happy to be here.
We've been talking about internet news consumption in Iraq. Obviously, the current spike in traffic highlights a larger trend in web use. What kind of media outlets are winning the battle for online eyes?
Well, I think in times like this, it's very similar to when, you know, a hurricane approaches the coast, on the East Coast, all eyes turn to the Weather Channel. And I think the same thing happens during war. All eyes turn to traditional media outlets. So they're going to go to a CNN website or MSNBC or their favorite local news outlet. And I think in those times, the traditional media outlets definitely pick up a very high amount of usage. I don't think you find some of the newer upstarts really excelling, although they do see some pickup. But people go with what they're comfortable with generally.
Now, as more and more people come to your site, you need to buy more and more bandwidth to accommodate them, correct?
That's true, but most news sites, especially the professional ones, tend to have a good bank of bandwidth ready for spikes. And bandwidth is cheap, generally speaking, to add some extra T1s or extra capacity onto a system, it really doesn't cost a whole heck of a lot of money. So when you have a huge spike in traffic, it tends not to really significantly increase the expenses.
And does it increase revenue?
Absolutely. We talked a little bit about this morning in another conversation. I think the myth is that advertisers run in the opposite direction when there's a war or a crisis. While it's true that, you know, for instance, during a hurricane, it's not a good idea for a hardware store to raise the price of its plywood, but it's probably a good idea for advertisers that they've got an extra supply of plywood. It sounds like a good community service, and it'll help them actually sell plywood. And the same is true during a war. It just makes a lot of sense to an advertiser to advertise where the people are.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are in media outlets, and they come there, and they don't stop buying cars or furniture. You know, during a war, there may be some skittishness, but while they've got their TVs tuned in or their internet websites ramped up, it's a great time to place advertising messages in front of them. And I think from what I've seen, I haven't seen any slowdown on advertising messages during the war.
Sri Srinivasan, is that your experience as well?
Yes, I think people are, as they go online, they're able to then really advertise to their advertisers that they're getting the eyeballs. That's why they're really trying to get people to come during the crisis and then stay when the crisis is over, and that's the key. So if they can do that, then they can get more advertising, charge more money for advertising, and actually profit, if you will, from the increased bandwidth and increased traffic.
So people are actually making money off of this newfangled thing.
Well, let's not exaggerate it too much, right, Gordon? You'd say that it really depends, because some of the organizations are... are definitely getting money in, but there are still costs involved in running a real news staff.
There is. Burrell Associates tracks mostly newspapers and TV station websites, the local, not the big national ones, but the local ones. And at the end of 2002, many of the publicly held media companies, and some of the private ones that we knew about, were reporting month-to-month profits on their internet operations. And this is after 6 to 8 years of being in the business. So they finally attained profitability. And let me tell you, during high traffic times, they charge their advertisers on a CPM or a cost per thousand basis. So the revenue goes up for them. And that's, you know, times of high news interest tend to be very good news for media outlets.
And Gordon Burrell, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
Okay.
Gordon Burrell, president of Burrell & Associates, a media research and consulting firm, and he was with us from their offices in Hampton Roads, Virginia. More when we come back from a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Join Ira Flatow on the next Science Friday as the talk turns to the reasons for and against the use of depleted uranium in ammunition, plus recovery of stolen Iraqi artifacts. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Today we're talking about the World Wide Web and its use during war. Our guest is Sri Srinivasan. He's a professor at the Columbia University School of Journalism, and he's with us from our bureau in New York. And I wanted to read you an email we got. This from Richard Chase. How do you determine that other news sources, whether internet or sources abroad, are any more reliable or less spun than conventional sources? What about the tendency towards, well, I think we mentioned this, urban legends on the web?
Well, that's a major problem. And so you have to be as skeptical of websites abroad or locally. So you have to go back over time. That's the only way you get to trust a site. And if you see something, it's very unlikely that you're going to learn about a new breaking news on just one piece of email or a website. So see if it shows up in a couple of different places. That's where the site like google.com and using the news site would help.
Any specific websites that you found over the past month that have been particularly useful?
Well, one site I liked is terrorismanswers.com. It's put out by the Council on Foreign Relations. And so what they have done is taken the kind of quality of their publication, Foreign Affairs, and applied that to giving information about terrorism and how it affects Iraq and the United States and issues all over the world. And that's a site I've liked very much. And so, again, you've never heard of it, but if you go there to terrorismanswers.com, you spend some time and you say, gee, I like some of the stuff here. This sounds accurate. And then you build trust over time.
Sri Srinivasan, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Sri Srinivasan was with us from our bureau in New York. He's normally a professor of journalism at Columbia University. To check out more on web options for war news, you can turn to the Talk of the Nation page on NPR's website, which is www.npr.org. You'll find links to the Pew study on the Internet and the Iraq War, which we discussed earlier. You'll also find an online gallery of websites on Iraq War coverage from the Poynter Institute, an overview of online Iraq War coverage from cyberjournalist.net, online essays from the field by NPR news correspondents, and web logs, a listing of popular and Iraq-related blogs. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.